So nice to have you back, Larry.
Glad we survived the weekend. Oh, God. No mushroom cloud.
Yeah. Let's get started, Larry, with what's going on in between Hezbollah and Israel. We've seen a huge explosion in Lebanon. What was that, Larry? It was in Lebanon or somewhere else?
No, there was one in particular that received a lot of attention, supposedly on an ammunition dump. It's really tough to sort out the propaganda that Israel's putting out from what's actually taking place on the ground. Hezbollah, their military resources and members, I believe, are underground. They're not above ground. There are above ground, it's very, very few. So they're trying to stay low profile. Israel's attacks really are more on the civilian population. They're trying to do to the Lebanese in the south of the Litani River what they did to the Gazans. Force the civilians to pick up and flee from one place to another, and in the process, they kill the civilians. This is not a direct war between Hezbollah fighters and the Israeli occupation force. It's really another proxy war attacking civilians. We've got some clarification earlier today from Alistair Crook with respect to the walkie-talkie/pagers that blew up last week. According to Alistair, going back 20 years, the Hezbollah was using fiber optic for its communications. They were not relying upon pagers and radio traffic, radio, you know, walkie-talkies. These were used primarily by civilians within the Hezbollah governing structure. And it's important to draw a distinction between someone who's providing medical care, someone who's providing social services, someone who's taking care of orphans. Those aren't fighters. And that's exactly, you know, Hezbollah has emerged and developed over the years as a government organization, not just a military organization or a paramilitary organization as it started out. So it's become a full-fledged, running schools, running clinics, providing social security, other services to people. And apparently the majority of those who were carrying were the ones carrying those pagers. So this was a pure act of terrorism by the government of Israel. But it's portrayed by Israel and the West as some great triumph over the terrorists. And it, you know, really has not altered the course of the war at all. And meanwhile, Hezbollah continues to use missile and rocket, ballistic missiles and rockets that are not precision-guided munitions yet, at least not in any great number, to hit military, radar, logistics sites, power plants in northern Israel, which is compelling the Israelis to abandon those places, and which is one of the claims by Netanyahu why they're conducting these bombings in southern Lebanon in order to recapture that territory.
Larry, we've heard that Netanyahu is sending a message, a video message to Lebanese. And here is the message, and then we're going to talk about it.
Okay.
The people of Lebanon, Israel's war is not with you. It's with Hezbollah. For too long, Hezbollah has been using you as human shields. It placed rockets in your living rooms and missiles in your garage. Those rockets and missiles are aimed directly at our cities, directly at our citizens. To defend our people against Hezbollah strikes, we must take out those weapons. Now, starting this morning, the IDF has warned you to get out of harm's way. I urge you, take this warning seriously. Don't let Hezbollah endanger your lives and the lives of your loved ones. Don't let Hezbollah endanger Lebanon. Please, get out of harm's way now. Once our operation is finished, you can come back safely to your homes.
Yeah.
Full of crap. Hezbollah's not dropping the bombs on the Lebanese civilians. He is. And we've seen this, you know, we've now got 11 months of proof. Israel warns Palestinians, oh, get away, go for your safety. Then they collect in certain areas. Then Israel bombs the hell out of them. Who's going to believe them? There's no basis or foundation for trust in Israel. What they're going to try to do is purge the territory that's south of the Litani River of Hezbollah. They're going to try to initially do it with aerial bombardment. It's not going to work. United States tried that with the Japanese on Iwo Jima. 2 weeks, man, shelled the place. Hey, we had complete control of the air, dropping bombs. Japanese were dug in. You know, it took about another 2 months of fighting on the ground to get them out. You know, we saw the same in the shock and awe of the United States campaign in Iraq in 2003. Again, it didn't lead to the defeat, didn't result in the defeat of the Iraqi army. It had to put troops in on the ground. Israel, ultimately, if they're going to try to get rid of Hezbollah, they're going to have to put troops in on the ground. And I maintain that Hezbollah is as well entrenched in southern Lebanon as the Japanese were on Iwo Jima, and that they will inflict terrible losses on the Israelis, and the Israelis will not be able to succeed in their effort to remove Hezbollah. So, you know, we'll see. I think we've been in an interesting, so I call it a kabuki dance, the stylized, ritualized actions by the government of Israel. They issue the warning, they carry out the bombings, they threaten, oh, we're going to invade, we're going to do this, trying to elicit a reaction out of Hezbollah. And Hezbollah's sitting back, taking the punches, and throwing some punches in reverse, to the point that the Netanyahu government has banned media reporting out of certain areas for fear that they'll show the exact extent of the damage that Hezbollah is inflicting.
What's so amazing that he's trying to convince Lebanese people that their enemy is Hezbollah, is not Israel.
Yeah.
While he's killing them. It's unbelievable, the level of ignorance.
Yeah, but it's just the Yiddish term chutzpah. That's what Netanyahu is practicing. He's practicing the art of chutzpah. And it's disgusting. Israel's the most destructive force in the Middle East. Not Iran, not Hamas, not Hezbollah. And Israel's killed more people than Hezbollah, Hamas, and Iran combined. And yet Israel wants to play the victim. It's getting old. I am beyond upset by it, simply because of the human cost that's being inflicted on the Palestinian people, who are largely unarmed and unable to defend themselves.
Yeah. Pentagon said that before attacking Hezbollah and Lebanon, they were informed by Israelis that they're going to do that. And in your opinion, if they knew that and they can do nothing about it, how they can later on, they can talk about negotiation, any sort of peace, any sort of political settlement? Because the way that Israel is behaving right now is attacking each and every part of that region. And at the end of the day, the United States goes to that region, says everybody should be careful not to attack Israel because we are negotiating with somebody. Qatar and somewhere else. It's unbelievable what they're doing, Larry. Pentagon. Well, I'm talking about the policy of Pentagon.
Yeah, well, they have no interest in negotiated settlement. The participation in negotiations and the talk about negotiated settlements is nothing more than a pretext. It's a diversion. Israel has absolutely zero intention of negotiating a genuine agreement with the Palestinians that would create a Palestinian state that would allow the Palestinians to be to exist in their own territory and have their own government. Israel's not going to allow that. We saw just yesterday, they invaded Palestinian territory. Not Israeli territory, but Palestinian territory that's under the authority of the Palestinians, in theory, to shut down Al Jazeera and to shut down other news media. That's an illegal act. That's not their territory. They don't have that right, but as far as they're concerned, it is their territory. And they don't give a damn what was agreed upon in the past. They're going to destroy those agreements. Time for the rest of the West to wake up to that fact.
Many people, Larry, when it comes to Israel, many people are arguing that the United States would benefit from this conflict. But in my opinion, there is nothing to be in favor of the United States in that region. It's unbelievable because as long as we have these type of conflicts, if we assume that the main objective, the main enemy of the United States right now in the mind of neocons is China, they don't like to be in the Middle East. They don't like to be focused on the Middle East. And the question is why they're not trying to do something substantial to bring a sanity to the conflict. And why Netanyahu, who's not having a rigid support, a very important support, a very solid support from Israelis, the population of Israel. And at the same time, the United States, it doesn't seem to take advantage of that and putting some pressure on Netanyahu.
Well, it's not Netanyahu. Netanyahu's not the problem. Get rid of Netanyahu, you still got the same policy. Israel's policy is not going to change if you get rid of Netanyahu. You know that, and that's part of the problem. If we try to make this personality focused, you know, oh, if we just get rid of Netanyahu, all of our problems will be over. No. Let me come back to what I said earlier. The Israelis, the majority of the Israeli citizens, have zero interest in a negotiated settlement with the Palestinians. They don't want the Palestinians to live. They don't want them to continue to exist. They'd rather they just go away, and if they don't go away, let them die. Let them be destroyed. And anybody that in any way facilitates, tries to protect those Palestinians is just as much part of the problem and needs to be eliminated. That's how they view it. So it doesn't matter what Netanyahu says or does. It does not matter. Yeah, is he an asshole? Absolutely. Is he corrupt? It sure looks like it. But they lock him up, take him out of that job, and put him in jail. The policy, what we're witnessing, is not going to change. So if what people are looking for is to get a change in the policy there, you have to look for answers outside of Israel, not inside of Israel.
Are they going to be successful in sending their people to the northern part?
No. I mean, you've got to eliminate Hezbollah from the area, from the Israeli border up to the Litani River. You know, they're heavily concentrated in there. They're not coming out. Israel doesn't have the ability, the combat troops or the armaments necessary to root them out. So, you know, Hezbollah is going to stay there and fight and will continue to make it untenable for the Israelis to return to their homes in the north. And maybe what Hezbollah will do in the coming weeks is step up bombardments into the middle of Israel and force an evacuation of those areas.
And today we saw that foreign ministers of Iran and Saudi Arabia, they were meeting, and I'm sure they were talking about the conflict in Gaza and what's going on in Gaza. How do you find it right now? Is the relationship between Iran and Saudi Arabia getting better or getting worse?
No, it's getting better compared to what it was 2 years ago. It was a night and day difference. And that was brought about in large measure because of Russia and China and their intervention on the diplomatic front. And, you know, I think the Saudis, you know, for all of their duplicitous behavior, they're starting to see the writing on the wall that this United States is going to lose in Ukraine. Ukraine war is not going to go in their favor. And that Israel is being treated in a way that is making it quite clear they're not going to be able to sustain operations for like this for another year or so without a continued major international assistance.
Can we point out a single country in the Middle East that is so much important, that is the most important country in the eyes of Israelis?
For important in what sense?
In whatever, politically, economically, that this country would be so important for the existence or for the policies of Israelis. That would be Saudi Arabia or Turkey?
Turkey has more influence over hurting the economy in Israel. And Turkey and Israel are already estranged. But from the my understanding is from the business standpoint, those commercial relationships remain intact. And that's part of the problem. You know, we hear a lot about Sunni versus Shia, Jew versus Muslim. But in a lot of these situations, you'd pick beneath the surface, and it's all about money that's passing back and forth between, you know, it's mutually beneficial. So, you know, this is nothing new. You know, we've talked about this before as well. We go back to, you know, 1981, you know, 83 years ago, 43 years ago, when Israel and the United States were selling weapons to Iran during the Iran-Iraq war at the same time we were supplying weapons and intelligence to Iraq. We were doing it with both sides. The U.S. point was to, you know, that we were able to make some money for our corporations in the process, but more importantly, we were using it as a policy to try to weaken Russia's presence in the Middle East at that time.
Yeah, and in your opinion, is as if Turkey is important for Israel, are they doing anything to convince the Erdogan or whoever is in power in Turkey to convince them that they're going to have a future together? I'm not talking about a friendship, a future together.
Not at this point. I mean, Erdogan's sending very mixed signals. He talks very harshly about the conduct of the Israelis. But he didn't do anything to shut down the oil, the flow of oil. Cut off the flow of oil to Israel and you will bring about an end to this war.
And the United States not going to let. That's why they're putting a lot of pressure on Erdogan. We don't see it because it would be behind the scenes.
Well, there's limits to what kind of pressure the United States can bring on Erdogan. I mean, to be candid, Erdogan's already signaled his dissatisfaction with the West by saying, hey, I'm going to join BRICS. You know, he still tries to play an independent role.
Which he's not.
Well, yeah, he's, but within that, He does not get treated with respect. Now, I think most of these world leaders that have dealt with the United States, they know when they're getting patronized and they know when they get treated with real respect. And I think it's finally dawned upon him that he's been patronized. And he's starting to push back and we've been working on establishing Turkey's independence from Western influence and, you know, from, say, Russia influence.
I don't see any bright future, Larry, the way that Netanyahu and whoever making these decisions in Israel, there is no bright future for them the way that they're trying to treat each and everybody in that region.
Yeah.
Not much that the United States can do about it.
This is like a perverse version of the Oprah Winfrey show when she gave away cars. You know, you got a car and you got a car and you, except in this case, the Israelis are, you're a terrorist and you're a terrorist and you're, and so we're going to attack you all. Yeah. And it, you know, women, children, Palestinian, Jordanian, Lebanese, doesn't matter, Syrian. Israel's decided that it has the right to go out and attack whoever, whenever, and whatever it wants. It's a law unto itself. And, you know, one of these days, I think it could potentially really backfire on it and put the very survival of this, you know, artificially created country in jeopardy.
Shifting the gear to the conflict in Ukraine, Larry, how do you see the current policy of Zelensky and his administration, the people around him? How are they willing to negotiate? Are they willing to continue this conflict and receiving more weapons? What can we understand from their behavior?
Do you remember the end of the movie Thelma and Louise? You know, the two, Susan Sarandon and Gina, what's her face? They're in a car and they're driving off a cliff into the Grand Canyon. They're going to crash. That's Zelensky, okay? Zelensky has now literally driven off the cliff. Just a matter of time waiting for the crash. So, you know, he claims he's got a victory plan. Yeah, give me more money. Give me more weapons that you can't make. Well, there's a good suggestion. And, you know, let me attack Russia so that it'll cause World War III and bring you into it so you can do all the fighting for me. That's his plan. And at least, you know, people in the Biden administration, some in the, I guess, in primarily the Pentagon went, whoa, wait a minute. No. We're not doing that. Sorry. Not going down that road, Z-Man. And so he's going to do everything he can to pander to politicians this week and try to rally some in the global South to his side, which I think will utterly fail. It's really interesting that Zelensky and Netanyahu are in some aspects acting the same way. The Ukrainians now are dealing with an army that they cannot defeat and they cannot stop. And every day, the Russians are taking more and more territory and moving to break up the existing defensive lines. With the Israelis, they're trying desperately to defeat Hamas and now Hezbollah. Well, Hamas is an unarmed, largely unarmed, poorly equipped guerrilla group. Israel's been fighting them for 11 months. How's that turned out? They're still standing. Still standing. Still fighting, still recruiting, still training, still launching ambushes. You know, it's something the Israelis cannot win. Yeah, and we're 11 months into it. And then I'll add to it, you know, the additional activities that are coming to pass. So, you know, this is, it's war without end, seemingly, except the supplies are running out. And the supplies of manpower running out on both sides, both in Israel and in Ukraine. Israel doesn't have unlimited manpower. Israel doesn't have unlimited economic resources. So the more they attrit and they sort of punch themselves out against Hezbollah, Hezbollah's just waiting for them to come. And then when they come, they'll start ambushing and chewing them up. What do they do? Whereas for the Ukrainians, they're running away. They're not even now putting up much of a fight in many areas, and the Russians are just steadily moving forward. They're going to be at the Dnieper soon. you're hearing people associated with the whole Ukrainian operation talking increasingly that this thing could be over by December. Very, very well could be.
Because they were talking about that. They're not considering any sort of negotiations right now. Maria Zakharova was talking about it. And because she said that we are not negotiating with Zelensky and anybody in Ukraine. And do you find it's all about negotiations, or she's just pointing out just with Ukrainians, we are not going to negotiate with the United States? They would negotiate.
Yeah, if you're going to have negotiations, you know, there's got to be something in it for either side. The Ukrainian position is the Russians got to give up all that territory, give it back, and get the hell out. And Russia's saying, no, we made that offer 2 years ago, and you told us to go pound sand. That offer's off the table now. I mean, think about it. Back in March of 2022, the Russians had agreed in principle to say, hey, look, you keep Donetsk, you keep Luhansk. They weren't even saying anything about Zaporizhia or Kharkov. Those were considered, you know, already part of Ukraine. And we'll, you know, secure the rights of the individuals in here, stop the attacks on them. And then we'll keep, then guarantee our base at Sevastopol in the Crimea. And if, at the same time, you swear off that you're not going to join NATO. You do those things, we'll stop the war today. We'll go home. It was Ukraine said, hell no, no, we're not going to do that. And then, you know, they launched what essentially became the first of several failed counteroffensives. And they carried out a massacre of civilians in Bucha that they tried to blame on the Russians, but it was a Ukrainian operation. So, you know, the time for negotiation came and went. Putin's last position was you pull your troops, Ukraine, out of the Donbas completely, Donetsk, Luhansk, pull them out. Pull them out of Zaporizhia, pull them out of Kharkov, pull them out of Kherson, pull them out of Kursk, and then we'll talk about the disposition of these territories going forward. Ukraine and the West rejected that as well. So, you know, like I said, there's no, it's like a dance. You may want to dance, but if I don't want to dance, we ain't going to dance. Okay.
British Foreign Minister David Lammy is talking about fighting the conflict in Ukraine in 2026 and beyond. And does he know something that we are not aware of?
No, he doesn't. I think, you know, he may have been sharing in some of President Zelensky's recreational drug experience when he was there to be that sort of delusional. You know, the West keeps saying, oh, this is just going to drag on. This is going to be a stalemate. It's not a stalemate. There's nothing about it that's a stalemate. Ukraine's getting crushed and doesn't have any way to turn any of it around. They don't have more men to manufacture, to train. They don't have the facilities or wherewithal to train them. They don't have the air defense systems to protect them. They don't have the tanks, the artillery, the fixed-wing aircraft, the drones. All you bring it all together to put together a fully fighting force that could challenge the Russians. That's past. Right now, they're just scrambling around trying to, you know, put out scattered fires. They put them out in some area, but the Russians pushing others. The overall momentum of this attack is forward and towards the Dnieper River.
Who's in charge, Larry, right now in Washington? Is Pentagon or Antony Blinken and Jake Sullivan?
I think the Pentagon's wielding more influence. But, you know, it's really not clear who's in charge, who's running the show. I have heard that Biden, even though he's mentally handicapped right now, he still understands enough of the game that he's wanting to stay in charge and on top of it. And he was sending a clear message the other day when he put on that Trump MAGA hat at the one rally. He's going to, he may end up doing what he can do behind the scenes to make sure that Trump wins. Unless he gets the kinds of assurances and promises out of Kamala. We know that the Bidens and Obamas do not like each other. There's animus there.
And how about recently Jake Sullivan was talking about the way that they're trying to help Ukraine. And he simply said that we don't have the weapons to send them there.
And yeah. Well, I'm glad he's finally admitting what, you know, myself and Scott Ritter and Doug McGregor, Brian Berletic, and others have been saying for well over a year, you know, the boys at the Duran, you know, they're acting like this is a new revelation. No, they're just finally admitting what we've known all along, for God's sake.
And do you find it right now, Larry, recently Colonel Daniel Davis on his YouTube channel talk with Ben Hodges, General Ben Hodges.
Boy, that was a treat.
Larry, that was so much. I watched it because I wanted to know how he's going to react to the questions. Do you find it that he's changing his position?
No, he's doubling down. Let's start with the assessment of the counteroffensive that started in June of 2023. At the time, I know I was writing about it. I think Brian Berletic was, Scott Ritter was, Doug McGregor at least commenting on it. Even Danny Davis, I think, back then. All of us were noting that this isn't going to go anywhere. It's going up against well-entrenched defensive lines that have been under construction for more than 6-7 months. There are massive minefields, and Ukraine doesn't have any kind of fixed-wing or combat-air rotary-wing aircraft to bring forward to protect the troops on the ground. So it's going to fail. That's just standard doctrine. You want anybody with a modicum of military education knows that. And sure enough, in this interview with Danny Davis, Ben Hodges admits, yeah, we'd never send troops. And then they want to grab him shaking. Then why the hell didn't you say something back then when you knew that? But you go and pretend, oh, yeah, they're going to be in Crimea by August. Well, so when you choose to ignore key variables and then try to pretend that they're no longer relevant, but then later come back and try to rehabilitate yourself by claiming, oh, yeah, those are the relevant variables and we weren't allowed to address them, you know, that's not a lie. Yeah, I mean, that is a lie. So he just demonstrated that he's truth challenged. And then on top of that, he just had a lot of the factual errors. You know, Europe's the number one trading partner of the United States. Nope. That would be China first and Mexico second. I think the European Union was the distant fourth. So this, you know, you get facts like that wrong. He failed to remember that the entire operation to build those entrenchments that the Ukrainian army was unable to breach started in October of 2022. And at no point during that construction were the Ukrainian military people attacking those sites and trying to destroy or disrupt them. Yeah, they went happily along building. So, you know, missed that timeline. and just to be out of touch with reality. I was really pretty shocked. I mean, I was glad to see that he went on to talk to Danny, and Danny did a fine job of talking to him. But at the end, he is so I felt it was important for people to see that, see people overseas in other countries, to see what this former top general in the U.S. Army is thinking, how he thinks, because it's irrational. It's not rational.
Yeah, it came to a moment he called the Russians these animals.
Yeah, animals.
Believable.
And accused Danny Davis of spouting Moscow Putin talking points.
Emmanuel Macron, Larry, was talking about that we want to have a future in terms of the relationship between Europe and Russia. Is that how is that possible in his mind? Because the way that they were just helping Ukraine during this conflict and right now about the future relationship, I don't believe that Russia would consider anything with Macron, maybe with somebody else in France, but with Macron, nothing gonna happen.
Well, probably not. Once he leaves his current job, he could get a new position as a weather vane on top of a roof. He tells you which way the wind is blowing, and the fact that he's now singing that tune tells you that they recognize Russia's winning and going to win. So when it wins, it's going to be a dominant power that is going to have to be reckoned with. You know, at least Macron is not crazy. He may be overly ambitious and like a conniving, lying politician, but he at least recognizes the reality. Russia is going to be holding the cards in Europe in the next two years or so.
Their future, there is no possibility to consider the future of Europe without Russia, Larry. There is no country on this planet to help them with energy, to provide them with energy like Russia is capable of.
Well, you know, I think if you go back 3 years, Russia, I think the majority of the Russians still saw themselves as, hey, we're European, we want to be part of Europe, let us be part of that. Not now. I think the sentiment has swung in such a direction that the Russians want to be Russians first and foremost, and they have little interest in being part of the West with all of its degeneracy, drug abuse, sexual confusion.
Yeah. And let's wrap it up, Larry, with the latest article that you've written on your website, which country is the genuine imperial hegemon? And what's your point in this piece?
Well, if you're monitoring the news media in Washington or in America, what's being said about Russia, what's being said about China, constant refrain is that, oh, both countries are, they're trying, the Russians are trying to rebuild the Soviet empire. They are empire builders. They're intent on conquest. They want to take over all of Europe. And same for the Chinese. So I just asked a simple question. I went to Google and said, how many military bases does the United States have outside of the United States? Boom. Up came the answer. Over 750 bases in over, 80 countries. Can't see the number there. Well, that's quite a bit. Well, how about Russia? Russia's this big imperialist force, right? Wrong. Russia's got 21 bases. I think only two of them are outside of its immediate geographic area. The other 19 are in the territories like Tajikistan, Armenia, Turkmenistan, that surround Russia and were part of the former Soviet Union. So Russia's got bases on its periphery, and ditto for China. It's the United States that has got its bases literally on the borders of China, on the borders of Belarus, and on the borders of Ukraine. And if you're looking at it from an intelligence standpoint in those countries, you'd recognize the threat comes from the United States.
Yeah. Larry, thank you so much for being with us today. Great pleasure as always.
Thank you, my friend. We'll see you Friday.
See you.
Okay. Bye. Bye.